3PO, activate the nav computer.
I'm not awfully keen on this spaceship, Master Luke. It's so messy. Cakes, half-eaten sandwiches.
Oh, will you stop? You don't hear R2 complaining, do you?
Yes, I do. He just said it's like a pigsty.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present the weekly Force Cast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Yes, it is the Force Cast, your weekly dose of Star Wars. We are the official podcast for TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. This week's episode for October 13th, 2006 is brought to you by our good friends at Official Picks. For officially licensed Star Wars photos and autographs, look no further than your nearest web browser. Tune it to officialpicks.com. That's right, picks with an X, .com.
Before we get started with the show, we'd like to pass along some sad news. One of our forum members, Philip Caravis, passed away this week, and we'd like to pass along our condolences to his family and friends and for all those people who communicated with him in the forums. That he will be missed there for his comments and his positive attitude. So,
absolutely. And, you know, this happens because there's so many Star Wars fans. There's so many people hitting the forums at Rebel Scum and TFN that this is bound to happen once in a while. And when it does happen, it's very, very sad. But it's also really cool to see the way the community comes together and supports these folks. It's just a whole extended family. Fans, and we do sincerely send along our deepest condolences. He was a young man. He was only 18, and just really unfortunate. So he is now one with the Force, and we wish his family and friends all the best. But having said that, we do have a good show this week. A lot of news and some kind of important news, I would say. Kind of stuff we haven't heard in the past coming out of Lucasfilm, so I'm really excited about that. I wanted to remind you about our continuing promotion for the month of October over at PodcastAlley.com. As you know, Pete and I have been kind of talking about this quite a bit in the last couple of weeks and on the forums over at Rebel Scum. What we're trying to do is get our show, The Force Cast, in the top 10 over at PodcastAlley.com. So if you're listening to the show and you haven't voted yet, please go over to PodcastAlley.com and find The Force Cast. We have links, direct links, to our show's profile on our show notes at TFN and RebelScum.com. And cast us a vote. All you have to do is just input your email address, and they send you one quick email just verifying, yes, you do want to vote for The Force Cast. You click that link. Boom, you're done. No spam, nothing else. It's very easy, and there's something in it for you. If we end up in the top 10 by Halloween... Now, we're in right now, as we're recording this, we're number 9, but what really matters is the end of the month, sort of when the polls close, so to speak. If we're still in the top 10, we're going to do 10 straight days of giveaways in November with prizes donated from our friends at Official Picks. It's going to be really cool, and we really want to give those prizes away. We're looking forward to that, so please vote.
And we've got a great show. We've got Kyle Newman, director of Fanboys and an upcoming remake of Revenge of the Nerds, that will be in the cantina with us this week. He's a great, rabid Star Wars fan and has a lot of really fun things to say. So,
yeah, it's great to actually hear someone who's made it into the film industry go from, you know, Star Wars fan to Star Wars filmmaker. So make sure that you stick around for that. That's going to be he's going to be our guest for the next couple weeks in the cantina. So a lot of things ahead. Let's get right to it. We've got headlines coming up. Let's punch it.
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
And our top story this week, Josh from MTV.com sent us a heads up for an interview that they posted with George Lucas. In it, George mentioned several new pieces of information in regards to both the animated and live-action TV shows. Information that we've not heard until now from anyone at the Lucasfilm camp. This was big, big news. George has made a couple of appearances in the last week or two. There was an event out in L.A. with Harrison Ford. I can't even remember what event actually it was. And then there was, of course, the big event was the groundbreaking ceremony for the new School of Cinematic Arts at USC. course, we know.
Donated completely by George Lucas, of course.
To the tune of $175 million. But what's really interesting, some things that he said, first of all, he addressed the two shows. As far as the animated show, we're quoting now, George says, quote, "We've got a number of episodes finished. It looks really good. It's a lot of fun. But it's quite more sophisticated, and it's not like anything you've seen on television before." He compares it to the Tartakovsky 3D or 2D animated Clone Wars show from Cartoon Network. And he says, well, Tartakovsky used his distinctive 2D style, but it was 2 minutes at a time, so it was a test subject kind of idea. It worked and everything, but then we knew we were eventually going to do the 3D animated series. So it sounds like they've known about this for quite some time. Now, we know that they purchased and opened the animation studios out in Singapore, so this is obviously pretty premeditated. I don't think he does anything on a whim. And I think obviously the original Clone Wars series was just sort of test the waters.
Well, I think it showed that there was a lot of interest in an animated series, even if it wasn't, something to do with Ewoks or droids or something along those lines, that a primetime sort of cartoon series could be very successful. And, they were building on Tartakovsky's previous experience with that, but I think they always had something like this in mind.
Well, I think you hit on a good point there. You compared it, you drew comparisons with the droids and the Ewoks, and we're going to get to this in a little bit. But, I think one of the big reasons why Clone Wars was so successful, as opposed to droids and Ewoks, is it actually dealt with relevant issues in the Star Wars universe and with relevant canon characters. Speaking of relevant canon characters, the subject of the live-action series came up, and here's what George had to say. No Skywalker story stuff, as he called it, stuff. And no Han and Lando. Now, that's funny. I had not heard this rumor. Have you heard this about it being a Han and Lando story?
I hadn't really heard that, but I'm sure there's speculation all over the map that it could be about anything that actually came in between there. But we've got some confirmation on what it probably is going to be.
Yeah, well, for those of you holding out for the adventures of Han and Lando a la Crockett and Tubbs, Miami Vice, it's not going to be that. It is not. He says it's going to be something, quote, completely different. It's going to be about people who are in Star Wars, but not the main characters. Here's what he says. Steered by characters like TIE Fighter or Rebel pilots, only glimpsed at in the films. Here we go. Droids 2. The adventure continues.
Now, it's not like he came out and said there was going to be a pink Boba Fett that was going to show up on the set.
No, but I don't know, man. I'm gonna continue with the story, and we'll come back to one of my problems with this whole thing. But at any rate, there is a clip. If you want to go over to IESB.net, good friends of ours, check out. There's an audio clip, a video clip rather, of George being interviewed by someone on the staff over there, and I can't remember exactly what was said. These quotes that we're reading are from the MTV interview, and there's been several different interviews that, Google News, my Google News reader was going crazy with this. They acted like they had never heard of this Clone Wars cartoon series before, and we've known about it forever and been anticipating it, and so forgive us if we are kind of tap dancing around this to an extent, but there's just been, again, so many stories that have come out in the last week. So check that out at IESB.net. Now, one of the things that George said that's changing is just the way people look at entertainment. He says people are not doing anything by habit anymore, including going to movies. He sees the future of movies being all downloadable and on demand, and that it's going to be about quantity. He says it's not going to be like the old days where you spend $100 million on production costs and another $100 million on P&A. He says it makes no sense. For that same $200 million, he says, I'm going to be able to make 50 to 60 two-hour movies. That's 120 hours as opposed to 2 hours. So he says, in the future market, that's where it's going to land, because that's where it's all going to be pay-per-view and downloadable. And he goes on to say, you really got to have a brand. You've got to have a site that has enough material on it to attract people. And it goes on to say that he's even discussed the subject with Pixar's Steve Jobs and John Lasseter. So This is all very, very interesting. I mean, some of the things that have come out is the show has not been picked up by a network. And then he throws this in about It's all about downloadable. It's all about on demand. And he's talking to Steve Jobs. And he's, you know, I'm wondering, is that the future of StarWars.com?
Well, he did say that it was going to be like nothing we've seen on television before. So maybe that is.
Right. He alluded to the fact that it might be too intense for a Saturday morning audience, this cartoon. So, I don't know. I mean, my head's just spinning with all the different possibilities. He says, you know, if you don't do very many movies and you're really lucky and you really know what you're doing, you can get away with it. But, you know, at some point, you're going to lose the game. And again, he goes on to say that Americans are abandoning the entire movie-going habit. He says nothing's going to be done by habit anymore. It's all a matter of choice. But he does clarify and says, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that Lucasfilm is just diving into online distribution. He says, we've had a lot of experience in this area. We're not rushing in. We're trying to find out exactly where the monetization is coming from. We're not interested in jumping down a rat hole until such time as it finally figures itself out. So I guess he's kind of answering my question there. You know, they're not going to jump in and say, all right, we're going to produce this cartoon series, this live action series, and it's all going to be downloadable via iTunes or via StarWars.com. But clearly, I think he's indicating that that's probably going to be in the future of these two series.
Well, and there was that component of the original Clone Wars animated series where they were showing up on hyperspace. I don't know whether it was the next day or whether it was,
right.
It was actually like 15 minutes later or something like that. But, you know, so there is already that component that he's already, like you said, tried out and done. So I think there's probably going to be a mix of that going on in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, he's got the fans conditioned already to pay for content. You know, we've been doing that for some time with hyperspace. But this would really take it to the next level. I mean, they're doing that right now with iTunes. If you miss the latest episode of, you know, The Office or Battlestar Galactica or whatever, you can go to iTunes and download it and watch it the next day on your, you know, commute if you're riding a subway or, you know, whatever. Not that I ever watch my iTunes movies in the car. I would never advise something like that. But at any rate, you know, it's about options and it's about choice. And clearly, that's the future. I remember hearing an interview with him not long ago where he said that a giant server is going to be as important in the household as your furnace, because that's where all your movies are going to be, your TV shows, your family photos, your home movies, everything's going to be on there. And, you know, he really hasn't been wrong much as far as his seeing the way, I mean, not only does he kind of see the future, but he creates his own future. So if he decides he's taking Star Wars that route, then I think a lot of people are going to follow.
There's definitely the possibility that once he jumps into something, it may be a couple of years down the line, like we saw with Star Wars, where that was the revolution of special effects.
Right.
But there were still films that came after it, like Flash Gordon, where you could still see the strings being dangled along. So, you know, not everybody jumped on the boat, but once he cleared the path and showed that this is the way to be successful, everybody else jumped in behind him. So,
yeah. And, I mean, that's the struggle. I mean, where does the monetization come from? I know that there's a lot of different great big companies that you would assume out there are highly profitable, and they're not. They're not, because the money that it takes for the server space and the bandwidth and all of that to make this functional is, right now, it's so expensive that I think that it's hard to turn a profit. I would say if any property, if any franchise can make that change that, rather, it's going to be Star Wars.
Yeah. And you look at even an example of what you're saying, you know, they just announced that Google purchased YouTube.
Right.
$1.6 billion, and they haven't turned a profit on YouTube yet.
Right. That's a staggering number for a company that is losing money. But clearly they see a future in it. And
absolutely.
I don't think that YouTube is going to be free for much longer.
No, unfortunately not.
Not with buying it for $1.6 billion. But let's get back real quick, and I know we're spending a lot of time on this, but this is big news.
This was a big story.
So he's saying we've got a couple episodes already in the can of this TV show, of the animated series he's referring to. Last we heard from Steve Sansweet at Comic-Con was he brought nothing to show because there was nothing to show. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, it makes you wonder if people are saying, oh, yeah, George, we got a couple episodes done already. Yeah. Well, can you show them to me? well, no, we want to wait till we get some more done, and then, you know, then we'll really wow you with all this. And is Steve just being coy about it? You know, I guess there might have been a riot there if he would have said, yeah, we've got a couple episodes in the can already, but I didn't bring anything to show you. So,
well, and you would think, but I would honestly think that if there was something there, something would have leaked by now. You know, they're exactly. Very secretive over there at Lucasfilm, but that didn't prevent things from leaking out during the filming of episode 2 and episode 3 and episode 1. And,
right. And, absolutely.
You know,
well, even in the prequel or the original trilogy, there, you know, we didn't even have the net and things were still leaking out.
Right.
So, it is odd that we haven't seen even so much as a concept drawing of this, but at any rate, then we move on to the live action series, and we had a Star Wars tale a couple weeks ago from our good buddy Mick, who ran into Rick McCallum at down in Disney, and Rick seemed pretty confident that the show was going to be about bounty hunters, and I heard that. I'm like, okay, I'll get into that. You know, I think that has some potential. But now we got George talking about minor characters like TIE fighter pilots and rebel pilots, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be harsh about it, but it doesn't excite me. Not that I won't watch it, I'm sure I will, but good Lord. I think that he is underestimating the importance of these principal characters. And if you're going to place a series in between episodes 3 and 4, and you don't ever see Vader, I think it's a big-time wasted opportunity. Big time. Because people will tune in to see Vader, but they're not going to necessarily tune in to see the adventures of young Wedge Antilles. You can laugh. You want to. Don't hold it in.
I do. Well, we know that people are drawn to Vader. Just ask Hasbro. But, you know, I agree with you definitely to an extent that there is definitely more of an appeal if there are canon or familiar characters that are showing up in this series.
I'm at least a Jedi. Give us a Jedi, George.
Well, and I don't necessarily think that this is what it's going to be. It's going to be 100 hours of us following around Wedge Antilles or his TIE fighter counterpart. You know, I think there's going to be a certain...
It's the Snoopy versus Red Baron thing is what I'm thinking of.
It's going to be... There's going to be a cross-section of different types of stories that happen
that
in the Star Wars universe. You know, it may
that
even
I could
be
get into.
Almost
Bounty
a,
Hunters 1 week, and maybe you do a 2 or 3 episode arc, and then you move on to something else.
Right. Yeah. Almost a... what was that series that Spielberg did? Where
Amazing Stories?
Amazing Stories. Almost that type of thing may be taking place in the Star Wars universe. Hmm. I'm not saying that's going to be... That's what it's going to be, but I think... You know, obviously, we don't feel that he's been wrong very often. Certain exceptions.
Well, technology-wise.
Right. Well, and most of the time, story-wise.
Right.
You know, I think if they do it well, you and I kind of disagree on this a little bit. I think if they do it well, they'll be in good shape. Regardless of where the characters lie or where the story lies.
I think it's going to come down to good writing. I think that TV audiences are probably more sophisticated than film audiences because it is an investment of your time. It's an hour a week. And I know even with TiVo, in our household here, we struggle to get our shows in. It's, you know, you don't have appointment watching anymore, so you can watch it whenever you want to or whenever you have time. But, you know, there's sometimes you just run out of time and you're getting, there was one show, I won't mention its name, but we were going to watch it this season. And we never got around to it. And by the time we did get around to it, there were 3 or 4 episodes in the hole, and we just said, you know what, we'll catch it in summer reruns. I just feel that if you're going to do Star Wars on TV, you got to do it right, and you got to do it big. And to see Vader hunting down the last remnants of the Jedi, or to see a young Boba Fett in kind of a fugitive-esque series chasing down one of the last Jedi, I think it would be fantastic. And that's what I was really getting excited about. So I see this and I'm like, ah. But the reality is, folks, this show is at least 2 years away from premiering, from showing up on your TV screen. So there's plenty of time for George to change his mind. And he has been known to do that. So at any rate, that's pretty much all I have to say on this topic. You get the last word.
Okay. Here's my biggest fear. Is you know that I was a big fan of the Firefly TV series. but I was a big fan of it posthumously, as in after it was canceled.
Right.
And the reason it got canceled, and even though it was well-written, well-produced, fantastically acted, and, you know, didn't have a cheesy component to it, it was very well done, it had a horrible time slot. And, you know, it was on Friday nights at 9 o'clock. And little be known to those producers out in L.A., geeks do have lives. And we do go out on Friday night. And this, you know, this predated the big TiVo craze. And so it died a slow death because people just weren't tuning right. in. Yet, oh. it's a very popular series. It even led to being a movie afterwards.
Right.
But I fear that that's what's going to end up happening, is they throw it on Saturday nights.
You know, though?
Must-see TV or something like that. And it just...
Here's what we know about George. He's never at the mercy of the suits. You know?
And from the Business Wire this week, Lucasfilm has won its copyright case against prop replica producer Shepperton Design Studios. Now, here's what this is all about. Lucasfilm brought the lawsuit against the UK company for producing unlicensed costumes, helmets, prop replicas, etc. They had done a lot of Stormtrooper helmets and things along those lines. So they were looking to make sure that they, A, stop them from doing it any longer. So it included a cease and desist order. And also to win back monetary damages for not having paid them anything for having done the license. They also kind of were misrepresenting the fact that they were officially licensed products.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily coming out and saying it, but, you know, having them as being out of an official series or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
So that they did win the suit in California, and they're pursuing it in the UK to make sure that they're not doing it over there as well. Now, there's a lot of big issues in this, and the president of licensing for Lucasfilm, Howard Rothman, he had a couple very interesting things to say, and I quote, "Lucasfilm vigorously protects its intellectual property rights in Star Wars. Infringers like Shepperton need to understand that we will pursue them anywhere in the world to shut them down and seek restitution." Now, inevitably, what's going to come up when you're talking about unofficial and unlicensed products? The 501st, the fan films, those type of things.
Sure. Yeah, it's opening up a whole can of worms.
Right.
So how are they distinguishing?
But he did have a lot to say about that. He says, "We appreciate that Star Wars has sparked the imagination of fans around the world. We would never want to discourage fans from showcasing their enthusiasm for the movies. However, anyone who tries to profit from using our copyrights and trademarks without authorization crosses the line. They become an infringer, and we will go after them." So basically, like we've always said, Lucasfilm gives a lot of leeway to anybody who wants to immerse themselves in the genre. Obviously, TheForce.net, Rebel Scum, this podcast, the 501st, the fan films, all that stuff is wandering down that line.
Yeah.
But they make the big distinction here. When you start to make a big profit on it, or a profit on it, that's when we're going to come and shut you down.
Well, and I think, you know, what you had mentioned earlier about they weren't going out of their way, Shepperton, to let people know that they were not licensed items. And you've got, I mean, you don't have a licensed Star Wars podcast, for example. You do have licensed films, obviously, but not outside of the six that we're obviously familiar with. But you do have companies like Don Post, and a whole host of others that do pay a substantial fee to Lucasfilm to get the rights to create these rubies, another example, to get the rights to create these costumes and these pieces. And those are the ones that I kind of feel for. You know, they're like, hey, we're doing things legally, we're doing things right. And you got these people over here that are making a mint on these things. They're not paying a dime to Lucasfilm.
Yeah, you look at somebody like Master Replicas, who has to pay for the license and has to charge $1,000 for a Stormtrooper helmet, but then maybe they can turn around and Shepperton is able to only charge $500.
Right.
Obviously, as a consumer, if you can't distinguish between the two, you're going to buy the one that's $500.
Sure. And in the case of rubies, and to an extent Don Post, you know, rubies is not meant to be museum quality costumes. They're essentially Halloween costumes, masquerade costumes. They're not even necessarily convention appropriate because you're just going to be so outmatched by the folks that are making their own and maybe people buying from Shepperton. but anyway, I do like that he did make that distinction that we talked about. You can infringe all you want, I guess, but just don't make any money off of it.
No problem with that here.
And some listener-submitted news. Forcecast listener Jennifer K. Levasseur alerted us to the fact that the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. will be hosting an event called Air and Scare on October 28th at the Udvar Hazy Center near Dulles Airport. The event's going to feature an appearance by 501st Legion members of the local Virginia Group Garrison. This is the Tyrannus Garrison. And possibly members from other D.C. area Star Wars groups. Admission is free, but you do have to make a reservation. Check out more details at the official site for the National Air and Space Museum, which is nasm.si.edu. And there may be a special appearance by the Space Shuttle Enterprise, but you didn't hear that from us. So Jennifer asked us to mention this, and we're doing it. So we hope that those of you out there within driving distance to the National Air and Space Museum, head on out there. It sounds like it's going to be a cool event, and any chance to hang out with the guys from the 501st, definitely take advantage of that. Great guys, and just the costumes, and it never gets old for me.
So, the Enterprise?
Yeah, the Enterprise.
Shouldn't they have named it the Space Shuttle Millennium Falcon? We've just received word from everyone's favorite bounty hunter, Jeremy Bullock, Boba Fett, that there's a new video montage out for a sci-fi comedy he was recently cast in. Titled Star Hike with a Y, Jeremy plays Dr. Yule Stryker. And check out the website for a brief description. Now, Jeremy's character is a doctor who apparently was all about medicine and healing and then has an accident and all of a sudden becomes the mad scientist. And not only is he always trying crazy concoctions on his patient and whatnot, he also has become somewhat of a woman chaser.
Does this take place in the future? Is this kind of a sci-fi thing? Or
it is a sci-fi thing, and it looks like there's definitely some spaceship portions to the montage. And make sure you do go to the website.
I haven't looked at it yet. You did.
Yes. Check out our show notes. Click on the link because, and this is another interesting thing, this is the modern day way to sell a TV series. You film the pilot and then you throw it on YouTube and then tell somebody how many hits you've gotten so that you can sell the series.
But I love that though. I love that. I love that grassroots way of marketing. It
what better way to show how popular you are than saying, look, I've got X number of hits on this website. But anyway, getting back to the series, the trailer is very funny. It's kind of a musical trailer, and it kind of flashes to all the different things. And it's very, it seems like it's a very British type comedy. I almost got the feeling that it was almost a Benny Hill type thing. There's lots of
what's wrong with that?
There's a lot of attractive women running around, a lot of innuendo, right, and a lot of physical humor. I think Jeremy falls down like every scene that he's in, he loses his balance and falls down. You know, like he almost like he's drunk. You know, as I was thinking about the character, I was kind of watching this over and over again and thinking, gosh, who does this remind me of? And it really kind of seemed like it was a montage, a combination of Denny Crane from Boston Legal and Doc Brown from Back to the Future. If you cram those together, you know, I was waiting for him to grab a woman inappropriately and go, 1.21 gigawatts!
And just a few last-minute stories to satisfy your Star Wars news cravings. There's a new promo for the Cinemax Star Wars in High Definition Extravaganza Marathon that's going to be taking place on cable providers all over America in November. Our good friend Gary D. wrote in to let us know that the latest and greatest ad for the Cinemax film event of the year is now up online. Check it out at Cinemax.com. Also, our friends at UntamedCinema.com have tipped us off to a cool batch of free, customized, downloadable DVD artwork jackets that you can print out and use in place of the retail versions. And they've got versions for the original trilogy. They've got versions for the 2004 editions. All the prequels are there. And it's pretty neat. I actually went on there and checked it out. And if you're not happy with the artwork that the folks at 20th Century Fox and Lucasfilm gave us, you got options now. So check those out. Also, we mentioned Jeremy Bullock earlier, and Jeremy just started his own VIP blog over at the official site at StarWars.com. So if you haven't checked those out, they are very, very cool. And give Jeremy some love. His first blog entry was, well, I'm kind of new to this, so you know, let me know what you want to hear and blah, blah, blah. So definitely give him some feedback and welcome him to the VIP blog family. And that's it. That's your Star Wars headlines for this week.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
And we're joined in the cantina this week with director Kyle Newman. Kyle has a film coming out next year called Fanboys. And Kyle, why don't you start us out and kind of let the listeners know where they might have heard your name before and some projects that you've done leading up to this.
Well, you know, I went to NYU Film School and did a lot of short films, but I mean, this is probably going to be the first thing that is unleashed on the world that I've done. And it's, you know, probably about 4 years in the making for me. And for Ernest Cline, the original writer, it's about maybe an 8-year journey. So,
wow.
There's been a lot of fans that have been a part of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The producer who introduced me to the project and brought me on board because he heard I was a massive Star Wars fan. He tracked down the rights, and that was like a year journey for him. And we'd all read about it online on the 80 Cool News when we were in college.
Uh-huh.
And when I finally came across the project, I was like, is this the same script that I read about in 1998?
You're right.
Like, yeah, they never made it.
Wow.
So we were, you know, I was so excited to become a part of it because I'd heard it was just a, you know, great story. And we needed to rebuild it a little bit, and that took some time, and it was like a side project for everybody, but, you know, it was made by fans, and this is really our first big thing together, you know,
right,
individually.
Right. And in what production company are you doing this for?
It's the Weinstein Company.
Okay.
Which is, you know, Harvey Weinstein, his brother Bob, formerly of Miramax and Dimension fame, so...
Right. Now, I had read at some point that Kevin Spacey was attached to this movie in some capacity. Is that still the case?
Yeah, Kevin Spacey was one of the producers on the film.
Okay.
And they helped us shepherd it along with this, you know, in the studios. And we more or less made it like an independent film, and the Weinstein got involved in the distribution and finance capacity, but we were kind of left to make the movie that we showed them as a script that we all believed in, so...
Well,
they're very supportive and protective of the material.
That's great. Well, we want to get... Obviously, we're going to talk a lot about the project and get some details about... I mean, I'm sure most of our listeners know what the film's about, but we know that there are some new folks picking up the show every week, so they might not be as familiar. We're going to get into all that, but I want to start off here and talk to you as a Star Wars fan. We know you're a big Star Wars fan. When did Star Wars come into your life? How did it come into your life? And... where did it begin with you?
Star Wars is actually the first thing in my life. That's all I can remember. I think my first memory was coming out of the drive-in, a drive-in screening of A New Hope when I was one. I don't think I remember anything before that. I don't remember the movie, but I remember coming out of this and being there with my cousins and my family. When I was a kid, I think the only words I could pronounce, I could pronounce... Star Wars character names before I could pronounce my brothers and sisters. So I was on the wrong track or the right track, depending on how you look at it, from a very young age. So,
right.
And my background was really in, you know, painting, drawing, things like that. And I was obsessed with drawing spaceships, monsters, aliens, Star Wars stuff, you know, all throughout my childhood. And that's kind of how it evolved into filmmaking.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, seeing the films at a young age, I mean, you said you were how old when you saw Star Wars the first time?
I think I was one. I mean, I was born in 76,
right.
Right before, you know, spring of 76, so it was like about a year before, you know, New Hope, you know, hit theaters.
Right, you saw it at a drive-in.
Yeah, it was, I might have seen it before that, and maybe that was the second time I saw it, but I
mm-hmm.
remember that being the first thing I can go all the way back to.
Right. And... growing up with the toys and all of that stuff?
Oh, obsessed. I mean, even when Star Wars was at it in the dark days, and all there was Star Tours and, you know, the Caravan of Courage, I was still, like, the only person in school that was, like, I was buying bags of stormtroopers and action figures off people in middle school and in high school, and people were like, yeah, sure, Newman, $5. I buy like 20 pounds of action figures.
Right.
And so, you know, I just accumulated a massive collection on top of my collection, which kind of like my older brothers had a lot of the toys, and they would buy me some, and their collection ended up, I inherited it. So really, it stuck with me. And I have pretty much every action figure up through 2004, except for two.
Wow.
And then I just ran out of money. I had to stop collecting, so.
It happens to the best of us.
I still buy select things, you know, like the things I was most interested in, but it was hard being a completist.
Oh, yeah.
Having all the vintage stuff and having most of the modern line and then having to stop, but.
So how have you narrowed it down?
It was at the expense, you know, I had to do that to make this movie, basically.
Right. Well, it's probably I'm sure it's going to pay off for you in the long run. You'll be going back, I'm sure, and picking up all the ones that you missed.
Or just making it's been like a whole other level of being a fan.
Yeah, you know, sure.
It evolved into something cool. So
yeah, making a Star Wars movie versus collecting the action figures. I think I'd probably trade places with you at this point. I think, even though
yeah,
I'm still
like
doing
was,
the toy runs.
At the time, it was hard. I feel like it was a good step.
Sure. When you decided to cut back on your collecting, how did you narrow it down? Are there still some things you try to pick up? A certain character that you collect, or
I like the exotic aliens the best. I buy a little bit of everything. You know,
yeah.
Something comes out and it just catches my eye. I mainly collect the action figures. You know, the Hasbro line.
Right.
Maybe this is blasphemy to some, but I'm not a big fan of the Unleashed. You know, I like the traditional kind of figures. I do like the Master Replica stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they did some product placement on our movie. And
oh, very cool.
Maybe some of it ended up at my house.
Just maybe. That's cool.
No, I got a couple of those FX sabers, which were really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And
they show up in the movie?
Yeah. Yeah, they do show up in the movie, actually. It's
sweet.
Kind of like, you know, they weren't around then, but it's like there's a prototype in Lucas's archive. that one of the characters maybe encounters.
Alright, okay, cool.
So what's the gem of your collection right now, either vintage or that stuff that you've gotten since?
Wow, I mean, I've got some old Revenge of the Jedi stuff, which I like.
Ooh.
Got a couple of Star Wars belt buckles, which always get worn every day, no matter where I'm going.
Dude, I totally had my
belt around. I don't mind wearing a Star Wars belt buckle.
I was that geek in elementary school with the Return of the Jedi logo belt buckle. So I know what that's like.
There's a great Jabba the Hutt one, which I'm trying to track down.
That's cool. So is it really the vintage stuff that means the most to you in the collection?
I think probably because it has the most sentimental value. But mm-hmm. there's some things that I've gotten later on, which are pretty cool. I know Lucasfilm sent me these two T-shirts that I really like and I'm wearing pretty obsessively. And what else? You know, it's just some unique stuff that, you know, our art department made for the film, like our versions of some Star Wars stuff, which is cool.
Right.
And we actually got to recreate a couple of the classic Star Wars sets.
Oh,
and
wow.
It almost felt like they were mine.
Well,
got to scan them, so it was like a big play set, but
what do you think it was? I mean, we've in the cantina, we've had a composer, we've had a graphic artist, comic book illustrator, and now we've got a filmmaker. What was it about these films that, and I hope, you know, I don't think I'm overstating, changed our lives, gave us focus on where to take our talents and make a career out of them? What is it about these films?
You know, it really did change people's lives. I know you say it to people, and some people look at you kind of strange, but, you know, I remember I wrote an essay in 7th grade about what I wanted to be, and I wrote that I wanted to be, you know, a filmmaker because I love Star Wars so much, and I got a D. I was like, why did I get a D? This thing is like a genius paper. And she's like, well, it was well written, but you're obviously, you know, making fun of the assignment. And I was like, no, I'm not. And then I explained it to her, like, that I was real. I wasn't making a joke of it. And then she's like, wow, this is even, okay. And I got an A.
Oh my god! So she just assumed because it was about Star Wars that it was some kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah, but like, yeah, and I really talked. I don't know. Maybe I talked about it so passionately that she's like, nobody could be this serious. But it's, I don't know. It's something that I bonded with it. It's,
yeah.
I think it was the characters, and it was like a mythology told in a way that you could understand. And, mm-hmm. and it seemed like there's so many things out there that you get inundated with that feel like they force you to connect with it. And there's mm-hmm. something about Star Wars that people naturally connect with. And I think it's because it brings together so many things in a way that had never been done before. And it was also the zeitgeist in the 70s. It was something really refreshing.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's vaguely familiar elements to it, but it was also told in a brand new, exciting way that was all its own.
Right.
And I think the landscape of movies back then was just very, there was something negative.
Right. Yeah.
And I think Star Wars was something really positive, and it's just, it was like every frame of the movies is otherworldly yet familiar.
Right.
You think of other science fiction films, and they're either really heady, mm-hmm. they're really, really dense, or they're overly simplistic, and they're all about utopian societies, or
right.
You know, like movies like Logan's Run, which I like, but mm-hmm. you can see why a movie like that's not going to connect and carry over into generations.
Sure. And maybe something like
Luke was the restless character that everybody feels like, and Han Solo is the character you kind of want to grow up to be. Like, that's a cool character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Girls like him. And there's just something really classic and universal and deep about it all. That it's, I mean, if we could figure it out and put it into words,
that's right,
why it's so profoundly affecting, maybe it wouldn't be that. I think it's like one of those mysteries. And, obviously George Lucas has said he never expected it to be
mm-hmm.
what it became. And that's what phenomenons are. You almost can't explain them.
Right.
And I like to leave it at that, where it's like, I don't even want to begin to understand. Like, there's times where it comes up and I'm like, why do I love it so much? Or why does, when you talk with people, it's like, why? Mm-hmm. I don't know you, but how are we connecting on this?
Right.
And how did you have the same experiences? But I almost don't want to get to the bottom of it, because that would kind of ruin the fun of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Force. You know, we don't really want to know why it works. It's just enough that it works.
Although I do like the midichlorians.
Oh, yeah?
it's kind of like that. I know people are like, you can't get to the bottom of it and explain the Force, but, you can.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, it was definitely lightning in a bottle. And, I mean, obviously, seeing the films, it said to you, this is what I want to do. Are there certain images from the original trilogy that you could think back of, certain moments in the films that just really stuck out at you, that you always look forward to seeing them every time, no matter how many times you watch the movies, you always look forward to this particular scene?
There's like so many. I mean, I love the original cantina. I love Luke and the binary suns. The first, New Hope had these very resonant, emotional images that were just like these visual tableaus, which were just really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it 100 times, and you still watch it, and you kind of get like the goose pimples, and you're like, that's pretty powerful. You know, it's like him staring out. It's like twin suns. It's like, I don't know, he's in another alien world, but he's going through something that people on Earth go through, you know?
Right.
So moments like that really carry over back into our world.
Mm-hmm.
I think A New Hope had a lot of great moments like that.
Right. And then moving on through Empire and Jedi, of course you and Pete were all about the same age, late 20s, early 30s. As the trilogy played out of the three, which is your favorite? If you had to pick a favorite out of the original trilogy.
If I had to pick one, I think Empire Strikes Back is a perfect film.
Uh-huh.
I think it knows exactly what it is. It's mm-hmm. not trying to explain anything. You're not playing catch up for anybody that didn't pick up on the first, and didn't watch the first one.
Right.
It's like, what's good about comic books is you jump in the middle of it and you kind of have to keep stride.
Mm-hmm.
And you figure it out. And it doesn't dumb anything down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still exciting, and it's like takes you in the direction you didn't necessarily expect.
And that's interesting you bring that up, because I would imagine as a writer, as a filmmaker, that must be challenging to do, to be able to write a series of stories but have each one stand on its own two legs.
It really is. I think that's probably, maybe that's why I think that one is just probably the finest of the bunch. It's hard to separate it and look at it like that. I really look at it as, all six films.
Sure. Now,
when you are sitting down to think about a story and where it goes, I mean, the Empire Strikes Back is really, like, depending on how you look at it, it's in the original trilogy, it's the second act, it's the meat of it all, and it's mm-hmm. got the key turning points, and it's where your heroes are kind of beaten down and challenged, and I think all the characters from the first movie also took on this greater depth in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
They added other dimensions to all the characters you loved, which is also something really hard to do in a sequel, because you feel like you know these characters, and
Okay.
You know, you gotta, when you set a standard for like a sequel, you want it to be Empire.
Tune in next week for part two of our interview with Kyle Newman.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
He's worth a lot to me.
And your Hasbro news for this week. If you've been checking out RebelScum.com, you know that Hasbro has asked that we run some polling to see what figures our readers would like to see re-released in 2007 as part of a fan favorites greatest hits line. Very similar to the greatest battles and the heroes and villains waves that came out right after episode 3. Well, this time they're putting all the figures, and I mean all the figures of the modern era from 95 to today, on the table. Now, these are straight repacks that they're offering up. No changes, no different paint apps. These are straight repacks. So what they've asked is, if they're going to do straight repacks, what would we like to see re-released? So I started thinking about it, and right offhand, I thought of TC-14, for example, from Episode 1, which was a pretty tough figure to get. Or maybe the first Slave Leia figure from the Power of the Force 2 line. Or maybe Tarkin from the same line. Or the removable helmet Vader. There's a lot of figures out there that were pretty tough to get at the time and have just gotten harder and harder as time has gone by to get a hold of. So this is your chance for your voice to be heard, and we went to the one, the only, Dan the Man Curto for a little bit of clarification on this promotion. So here's Dan to describe what's going to go on.
The information that I have is that it'll be 20 to 24 figures, and right. Instead of picking them, they thought, hey, you know what? It's the 30th anniversary. Let's find out what the fans want. Because what this does is it really celebrates the modern line. And that's what the anniversary mm-hmm. is all about, celebrating Star right. Wars. We've broken it up into 8 different categories. Every day we're going to be doing a new one. Power of the Force 2, Episode 1, Power of the Jedi, all the way up to Saga Collection. It's in the Rebel Scum forums. Each poll right now will run for a week. So the poll that went up last Friday, this Friday, I'll have the results. Saturdays will be next Saturday, Sunday next Sunday, so on and so forth. When I get all of the top 8 from each category, we're going to make it into a bracket-style tournament, sort of like March Madness. And I'm going to take the top number of votes against the last number of votes and you know, break it down every day. Here's, you know, round 1, round 2, round 3, the finals, the championship, boom. The last poll, which will be Expanded Universe, and that will go up on Friday the 13th. That will be available for people to vote until the 20th. At the end of the day, I'll probably start it on the 21st. We're going to start round 1 of the okay. tournament. So it'll be 64 figures altogether. And you'll have 32 matchups to see who's going to be, you know, number 1. The tournament's going to run for 11 days. Day 1, there'll be 16 matchups. Day 2, there'll be 16 different matchups. Day 3, there'll be the winners of the first day. Day 4 will be the winners of the second day. By the end of the month, we want to have all the choices. Hasbro will look at the number 1 choice, and while I can't say that will definitely be included, it will be included.
So there you've heard it from the source, Dan Curto. So thanks, Dan, for that. It's a little clearer to me now. When it first got on the site, I didn't quite understand exactly how it's going to work. But for those of you familiar with March Madness and the bracket tournament system, you're going to be able to follow along and see which figures come out on top.
And it's completely by votes, so there's not really any battling that's going to go on. So you're not going to see Darth Vader matched up against TC-14 and go, oh, he's going to lose because it's TC-14. So this should be a really fun promotion, and I can't wait to keep updated on which figures are going to go in, and I'm going to be really upset when my figures go down in flames.
Yeah, so make sure. Now, these individual polls for each collection, we'll say, each segment of the modern era of Hasbro, Kenner Hasbro figures, each poll is only going to be up for a week, and then it's going to be narrowed down to the top 64, and then they're going to go into the brackets. So definitely get on the Rebel Scum forums and let your voice be heard and tell us what figures you'd like to see remade if Hasbro were to oblige. And some great questions featured in the 14th week of the Hasbro Q&A. Starting off with some questions that were posed by Rebel Scum readers. A question came up about a new 3 3/4 scale Jabba. And I sympathize with this reader because I have never really been satisfied with any of the 3 3/4 scale jobs. In fact, we were just looking at one. I'm kind of cleaning out my own personal collection, and you saw the Jabba Glob Beast figure from the Episode 1 collection, and your reaction was less than enthusiastic.
Press his belly and ooze comes out of his mouth. That's fantastic.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a cool gimmick, but it wasn't necessarily the best Jabba. I still think the vintage Jabba is better than anything we've seen from the modern line. So the question was raised, and Hasbro says, yes, it is time for a new 3 3/4 scale Jabba. We agree, but just haven't found the spot in the line for him. We're thinking about it, though. Interesting suggestion on the organic build for his environment pieces, too. Thanks. So the reader had asked, you know, if you do this, will you do something similar to the Cantina packs where, you know, you could collect the whole bar by getting a few figures and pieces of the bar? And they're saying, can you release kind of a Jabba's Palace playset, but incrementally? And they said it's an interesting suggestion. So I would love to see that. I have wanted to have the Han and Carbonite on the wall with a little flower planner, you know, in the front and the band set up. I've wanted that forever. I used to make it out of Legos when I was a kid. And moving on to some other sites around the net and their questions for Hasbro. We talked a little bit about this last week, and I had to read this one again. The question came up about the Sith Infiltrator last week, and will it be to scale and be able to actually put a Sith speeder in there and a few probe droids and whatnot.
Darth Maul's mom.
So this reader, he asks Hasbro about a true scale Millennium Falcon. And Hasbro says, you know, a true scale Millennium Falcon would be huge. A more likely reality, and we have only discussed this, is that we would do a new one someday. The likelihood of this happening would be enhanced if the Millennium Falcon were featured in the new animated TV show. Now, folks, if you've been following the roundup posted at rebelscum.com and you're reading the responses from Hasbro, you're going to start seeing a theme. And they keep mentioning the A word, the animated word. Well, if we see this animated, you might get one. You see this animated, and they're talking about, in the context of this, is if you see the Millennium Falcon featured in the animated TV series. Now, why would we see the Falcon, the Millennium Falcon, that is, featured in the TV series? So, it just kind of makes you wonder if there's more to this than just Clone Wars. Just throwing it out there. Another question is, the question keeps coming up about playsets, and they're saying, look, Pirates of the Caribbean came out, and they released a playset of one of the pirate ships. Why can't you guys do this? And their answer is, you know, what other companies release is not an indicator of what we could release at comparable retail prices, or even that we could release the same toy as they do. Hasbro has different business models, factories, and standards that we work with. It's a completely different situation. One thing that has changed from the way, quote, it used to be, is that playsets used to be a low-margin driver that were intended to be the center of the action figure play pattern. You see this terminology brought up a lot by Hasbro, the play pattern, because, let's face it, they are making toys for kids. They go on to say the situation is very different, and playsets are not embraced in the same way by kids, so the business model is a little upside down, and we can't subsidize playsets like we used to. This pushes the price up to a very expensive range, and of course, the higher the price, the fewer the unit sales, the old catch-22. So until we rebuild the kid base, hopefully through animation, we can't look at 3 3/4 playsets as a viable line. So you know what I see happening is pressure from the fans to get some, you know, just to see some certain ship or something on the animated series just so Hasbro has an excuse to release either a playset or a vehicle for it. The question came up about the 30th anniversary, part of the first wave, the Galactic Marine, and asked if his helmet is removable. And they say, yes, it is in fact removable, and that the flames on the Super Battle Droid are also removable. They're snap-on parts. I'm very glad to hear that. I kind of assumed that was the case, but it's nice for the confirmation. And also of note, the Super Battle Droid is new and super articulated with a ball joint head and waist. Insert molded shoulders, elbows, and knees, but the hips are not ball joint. So it's virtually a new figure. Speaking of the 30th anniversary first wave, the question came up about the material and the size of the coins that are going to be included in the new 30th anniversary collection. And Hasbro responds that they're going to be aluminum. They're going to be the same size as the old ones. Same material, in fact, as the ones from the original Power of the Force line back in the 80s. And that the Vader figure that comes with the album is going to also be available at the stores. So you're not just going to have to order that online. So it's officially the first figure in the wave. Now, the number of the coins is yet to be determined. Now, they know that there's going to be 60 basic figures in the line and 60 coins to go with it, unique for each one. And they promised that one thing that they're going to do is hold the exclusive coins down to a minimum. The only exclusives which will have coins will either be the Celebration 4 or the Comic-Con figure. In addition, if we do end up putting a Greatest Hits basic figure line into play, we'd have to evaluate what sorts of coins they would have. And the rumor going around now is that they're going to be sort of a generic coin, maybe one for each of the six films that would be randomly packed with the Greatest Hits line. Another question that came up is about when does the Saga wave end, or the Saga collection end, and the 30th anniversary begin? So they said that the last wave of the Saga figures will be seen at retail in February and should be on shelf roughly through the end of March. All the other figures and sublines on shelf in 2007 will be 30th anniversary. Now, they went on to say that you'll notice that some of the things that have creeped out onto the shelves already have the new look, like the tin sets. And they said that was done deliberately so that they would kind of be able to progress naturally from the Saga collection to the 30th anniversary collection. So that wraps up the 14th Q&A. As always, check out rebelscum.com for the questions and links to all the answers from the sites that participate in this every week. There's some really, really good questions this week. We just sort of hit on a few of the major ones. I'm really happy with the way this is progressing. When they first rolled this out, it was just question after question of, when are you going to make this figure? And when are you going to make this figure? And the questions have really gotten a lot smarter. And let's, you know, face it, Hasbro's gotten a lot more open with their answers. So it's actually really interesting to read now. I look forward to that every week. So check that out at Rebel Scum. Some other Hasbro news. Hey, anyone noticed there's a spelling error on Hasbro's new Target exclusive Kit Fisto Starfighter? It turns out that the design team ran out of T's when they were spelling Starfighter. There's no word yet on whether this is going to be corrected, but hats off to Rebel Scum reader Mike for being the first person to bring this to our attention.
You know, this is one of those things where the guy who was in charge of that goes, look at that mistake. I'm fired, aren't I? And they go, yep.
And for you European fans out there, Rebel Scum is starting a new photo archive concentrating on the Kenner 3¾-inch action figures from the Power of the Force 2 line, but it's going to be the first complete European photo archive of the basic figures. They're going to present the deluxe figures and throw in the vehicles and the beasts in the coming weeks and months, but check it out at rebelscum.com to see the progress as this amazing archive takes shape. And, you know, that's one thing that we don't talk about enough here is the, I think we mentioned it last week or the week before, but just the incredible resources that Rebel Scum and TFN offer to fans. I mean, Dan Curto, who photographs and does the photo archives, just an amazing job. He's a great photographer. He loves the figures. Definitely check those out because they really, really are for some great photos. And speaking of which, he's got some additions to the photo archive set. He ran a little mini marathon of the Galactic Heroes figures. Some great photos of the new Endor AT-AT Toys R Us exclusive, and also the Toys R Us exclusive TIE Fighter from the Saga collection is available now in the photo archive. So definitely check those out. Apparently, the Costco exclusive Tater Trio is starting to show up. Collectors in the U.S. and the U.K. should look forward to the nearest Costco to find the giant Darth Tater that contains 3 potato buddies and enough parts to make Darth Tater, R2, Potato, and Spud Trooper. These are priced at $16.99 and around $12 in the U.K. And apparently both sides of the Atlantic are starting to see these show up. So, and folks wondering what's next for Galactic Heroes, we know that we've got some 2-packs on the way, including Chewbacca and a disassembled C-3PO, a Luke and Lando 2-pack, a Leia in Bespin gown with Darth Vader, and a Rebel Trooper and a Snow Trooper. Hopefully all these troopers are going to keep their eyebrows on, unlike the last wave.
It's doubtful at this point.
If there's any eyebrows to be had. And then don't forget, if you are late in jumping on the bandwagon of these Galactic Heroes, you're going to have a chance to catch up with these 10 packs that are coming out. We talked about these on a prior show. We ran down the whole collection But look for a wave of 10 packs featuring a Death Star escape theme, a Vader's Bounty Hunters theme, a Battle of Geonosis theme, and a Jedi versus Sith Episode 3 theme. That's it for Hasbro this week. Let's take it over to Sideshow.
If you were one of those collectors who was hoping to get in on the Endor Strike Team bundle set from Sideshow Collectibles in their 12-inch line, hopefully you did so quickly. The set sold out very quickly and was limited to 1,250 figures. Not actually figures, but bundle sets. That includes all three, again, Whitebeard, Brownbeard, and Nobeard.
Arrrr!
Our favorite Endor Strike Team, not Rebel Pirates. So hopefully you got in on that. If you did not get in on the initial release, you can get on the wait list. The wait list is up. And Jason is a story of success from the wait list.
I am, yes. I don't think I mentioned this last week, did I?
No.
Friends, you know how excited, or upset rather, I was that I missed out on the Mace Windu exclusive. So the day after I missed out, I thought, wow, what can I lose? I'll just throw my name on this wait list and hope for the best. And sure enough, I didn't even get a warning. I just got an email that said another Sideshow package is shipped. Sure as heck, it was the exclusive Mace Windu, and I was so happy.
So if you did miss out on a set, or you ever miss out on anything that's pre-ordered on Sideshow, make sure you get on the wait list, because all hope is not lost.
Yeah, I jumped on the Plo Koon wait list, so I'm hoping.
Also this week, Sideshow sent out an email to all of the people who purchased the 12-inch Jabba and the environment that goes along with them. It's a short video that shows each piece individually, Jabba, the throne, and the Salacious B. Crumb creature set, and then it shows them all together. It's a great video. It's nice to see. It's good high res. But I was thinking the whole time, why are they showing us this promotional video? We've already bought it. You don't have to sell us on it anymore. We already bought it. We know that we're in for the goods. Maybe it's because they haven't really taken it off our credit cards yet that they're thinking.
It's like, you ever see the movie Dave?
Yes.
When they're sitting around having the budget meeting and he says, so we're spending, you know, $4 billion to make people feel better about a car they've already bought? I think that's the kind of the principle here. They're making us feel, but they're like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. You see, you made the right decision. Look how cool it is.
This is a great set. Here, look at this. And it is. I mean, it looked really cool. But again, at the same thing, I was just sitting there watching it kind of spin around. And, you know, they put some cool sound effects in there. But I'm going, I don't need to be sold on this. I've already bought it. And one last Sideshow note, the Dagobah Luke and Yoda premium format figure has been pushed back from the end of this year to January of next year. So if you're one of the people that ordered that, hopefully they've already told you that. But in case you're wondering, not going to get it till after Christmas. So take heart. They will make sure it ships to you, but it's going to be a little delayed.
And we'll finish off this week's collecting segment with some Gentle Giant news. While he might have shared the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi with Ewan McGregor, Sir Alec Guinness will always be our only Ben Kenobi, at least until the Super Mega Giant Special Editions come out in 2018. Honoring the great Jedi Master, Gentle Giant has crafted the mini-bust of Alec Guinness's likeness as the venerable Obi-Wan Kenobi. The image that originates from another website comes as a bit of a surprise, and at this point, Gentle Giant has not officially commented on the bust. If you haven't seen this, check it out at rebelscum.com. It is an incredible likeness. And yes, I've officially decided I will buy it. I'm buying my first mini bust. I'm taking the plunge. It's going to be therapeutic.
Yeah. I believe this to be the first of many for you, my friend.
Oh, no, I'll buy more. But the question is, do you go back? You know, can you even afford at this point to go back and pick up the ones that you've missed on the mini busts? Probably. I know I can't. So, but, you know, my two favorite characters are Yoda and Obi-Wan, particularly the Alec Guinness characterization. So I saw it. It's amazing. And really, here's how I'm justifying it. I think that the Gentle Giant mini busts have really turned a corner with the Tamara Morrison Jango Fett. I mean, it was just amazing. So if we're going to start seeing, you know, like the Jango and like this Alec Guinness Obi-Wan, I'm in. I'm in for the rest.
Whatever you have to tell yourself.
Check out the all-new probe droid launched at rebelscum.com. This week, we're asking collectors which Cantina alien they'd most like to see Gentle Giant offer as a mini-bust. Look for the new probe droid ballot and cast your vote today. Here are your options. Moma Nadon, Hammerhead for those of you. Ponda Baba, or Walrus Man, for you Kenner fans out there. Lax Servak, Hem Dazen, Dr. Evazan, Zutton, or Snaggletooth as he's also known, Feltapern Travag, and Nabrin Leeds. Right now, as of the taping of this show, Hammerhead is running away with it. So if you'd rather see somebody else get minibus treatment, check it out right now at rebelscum.com. Now, this is sort of a hybrid story, we'd call it. It's not really a Gentle Giant Studios story. It's not really a Lego story. It's like a StarWarsShop.com story. Gentle Giant has actually done the sculpting and created a Darth Vader and a Stormtrooper statue or maquette in the Lego style. Now, it's not technically a Gentle Giant item because they're not going to be doing the distribution for it. It is an exclusive over at the shop at StarWars.com. They're priced at $64.99 and will have a very limited availability from February and March. So if you're a big fan of the Star Wars Lego look and you want to get them immortalized in a statue, definitely check those out. Those are coming your way from StarWarsShop.com. That's the collecting for this week. Check out all the stories that we talked about and links to the photos at rebelscum.com.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
LucasArts and Petroglyph Games announced that Star Wars Empire at War, Forces of Corruption, the highly anticipated expansion for Star Wars Empire at War, has reached the gold milestone and will ship to retail stores in North America October 24th. Now, this is an addition that's going to allow you to add the underworld to playing the Empire and Alliance factions that you can already control.
So is this basically introducing a new faction that you can actually be?
Yeah, it's going to introduce a new faction, some new skills, new tactics like piracy, kidnapping, and bribery, and skills like racketeering, slavery, and intimidation are all going to be added into
it. Or as I call it, my weekend.
Count me out for that one, thanks. It introduces a new character, which is kind of cool, that they're finally bringing in, that as part of the expanded universe, so to speak. Tiber Zahn is the boss of the Zahn Consortium, which is he wants to be the head crime boss or head underworld boss, the biggest one since
Jabba.
Well, since Jabba, although this takes place a little bit before that.
Right.
So, but you can control all their units and weapons, and they have some cloaking transports and buzz droids and all sorts of other cool stuff. So should be a cool addition to this, to what's already a cool game. Now, I was a little confused on this gold milestone, and I'm not sure if you can clear it up or if one of our listeners can clear it up. I was thinking maybe that the original game, the Empire at War game, had reached gold in sales. But I don't know if that's the same thing in video games. Or maybe this just means that the gold milestone is like the go portion of
gold
it.
Gold means go. Yeah, like this is imminently coming out. But, well, that's great. So they're going to continue to expand on this particular... now, this is a game that's for the PC platform.
Correct. And
there's a demo available now already.
There is a demo that you can attach. I don't believe you have to have the original Empire at War to play the demo. You may have to, but there was an original demo for Empire at War that a lot of people downloaded and got a taste of the game. So
you downloaded that, didn't you?
I did. It's a very different take on the Star Wars universe and what you can do in it.
Is it more of a sim type game, or what really?
It's kind of a battlefield sim type thing. So you are controlling in space, you're controlling battleships and you're telling them where to go and what to attack. And on the ground, you're doing the same thing with ground units and tanks and those types of things. So here you introduce other things that you can direct, and you have turns. So on each turn, you can send someone to kidnap someone or set up a pirate line on one of the hyperspace routes or something like that.
Okay.
If you're playing as
there's a lot of strategy involved in that sort of thing.
Yeah, and a lot of turns, and it's very turn-based, and it's not something that you can sit down and conquer in a weekend or play through a weekend, but you can continually build on the games that you keep playing. So it is a lot of fun if you have a chance to play it, and this should add even more elements to what's already a pretty cool game. And just a quick update to a story that we did last week. Ubisoft, Lethal Alliance now has some screenshots available. That's the new game that's going to take place between episodes 3 and 4 that stars a Twi'lek and her robot buddy that you can run around as. There's some screenshots out there that add on to what was in the Star Wars Insider last week and what we talked about last week. So check those out if you're a fan of the DS, Nintendo DS or the PSP, because that game's going to be coming out soon. And
the graphics look great on this thing.
They do.
For a handheld game, they look awesome.
They just keep moving it forward, and all the games that we used to play on Nintendo 8-bit platforms are blown away by something you can hold in the palm of your hand. So
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father, before the dark times. Before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future. Beyond the Outer Rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Bosplitty.
As we delve into the expanded universe this week, straight from the horse's mouth, results of the Dark Horse 100 program, which rewards 10 lucky comic shops with 100 variant cover comics exclusively available through the promotion. The following 10 stores were chosen at random to receive 100 alternate cover copies of the upcoming Star Wars Dark Times debut issue for free. All issues, regular and alternate cover copies, are expected to arrive in stores by the first week of November. So the big 10 are, now listen up if you're in any of these cities, Dreaming Comics and Games in Seattle, Washington, Collector's Paradise, Winnetka, California, Clint's Books in Kansas City, Missouri, Magic Dragon Comics in Arlington, Massachusetts, Warp 9 in Clawson, Michigan, Heroes and Villains in Hampton, Virginia, Cyborg 1 in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, Dragon's Lair in Round Rock, Texas, Up Up and Away in Cincinnati, Ohio, and Demolition Comics in Tampa, Florida. Now, our good buddy Dustin Roberts, who lives in the greater Cincinnati area, has promised to not pick up a alternate cover issue for me at Up Up and Away. But actually, what's going on, apparently, well, let's just say that some of the owners of these comic shops are not really offering these alternate covers in good faith. Now, they're getting them free from Dark Horse. And let's just say they're not going for free on eBay.
I think that runs a little outside the bounds of the spirit of the promotion, as it were. But again, I guess it's they're rewarding them, so...
Yeah, I mean, they are rewarding the owners, but hopefully the owners will reward their customers by making sure that at least you have a fighting chance to get these. So if you live in any of these cities and you patronize these particular shops, give them a call and say, hey, I don't want to see these things on eBay. You're getting them free. I know you are. Let's do business. Let me come in and buy one. Speaking of Dark Horse, fans of the current Knights of the Old Republic storyline Flashpoint are going to have to wait an extra month for the stunning conclusion. Editor Jeremy Barlow let readers know that, quote, in order to allow more time for Dustin to draw the conclusion of Flashpoint, we've moved Homecoming up one slot. Issue number 9 is now entitled Flashpoint Interlude Homecoming, and it'll be illustrated by Brian Ching. So what we're getting is the story is going to be delayed, but not the issues, just the story. And we'll also be waiting 2 more months for the conclusion of Rebellion's My Brother, My Enemy storyline, as Rebellion number 5 is scheduled to ship now on November 29th. But there is some good news for readers of the Dark Horse comic series. There's some reprints coming. The reprints are coming. Randy Stradley, group editor of Star Wars comic titles at Dark Horse, confirmed that we can expect reprints of 3 recent hot issues. Due to the demand from fans and retailers, Dark Horse is going back to press with the following comic book issues: Rebellion number 1, Legacy number 1, and Legacy number 2. These second printings are set to go on sale October 25th. And I've been keeping up with the Legacy series. I'm really having a good time with it. I like it a lot. I don't have issues 1 and 2, so I'm going to be picking those up for sure so I can go back. I'm going to have a pretty good idea of what happened, but it's still, you know, you don't have the art, so I definitely want to go back and get those.
And make sure you check out darkhorse.com, as they usually have a preview of all the upcoming comics, and they are up to Legacy number 5, and there's some pretty cool stuff that happens in the preview. It definitely gets your mouth salivating for more as it is. So this is a great series. I've enjoyed it so far, and they keep you wanting more.
Yeah, the previews are great because they give you an idea of, you know, what's happening in that particular issue. Usually give you a nice high-resolution cover picture. And, yeah, definitely check that out. It's a good way to keep informed on what's going on if you're not even reading the series.
For our Expanded Universe character of the week, we journey to a time even longer ago in that galaxy far, far away, in the time of the Old Republic, with Ulic Keldroma. Ulic was born on Alderaan to a Jedi Master mother who was held in very high regard. Unable to detach emotionally as required, she left the Order and refused to have him and his brother trained as Jedi.
Attachment leads to jealousy. The shadow of greed, that is.
Despite not being trained, his touch with the Force was unmistakable, and he used the advantage to take on anyone he could in challenges of any kind, and usually bested his opponents.
He always wins!
This made him popular to the masses, but not among the Alderaan ruling council. As Ulic's prowess grew, his mother reluctantly realized his potential, and allowed him to begin his training under Master Arca Jeth on Arcania.
You must learn the ways of the Force.
He joined his brother Kay and a Twi'lek named Tot Donita in training under Master Jeth. Ulic learned quickly, and the three were quickly given their first mission: bring peace to the warring factions on the planet Onderon.
The Jedi bring peace. Use your weapons as a last resort.
The people of the city Iziz and the Beast Riders of the Wildlands were mounted in a fierce civil war. Ulic met with Queen Amona and Princess Galia as the king was very ill. As they met, the Beast Riders broke into the palace and kidnapped the princess.
Beast Riders have broken through the northern rampart. They're heading for the...
The Jedi pursued them and attempted to rescue the princess. As they found the group, they interrupted the wedding of the princess and the Beast Rider prince, Oren Kira. The Jedi were told that the royalty of the planet were direct descendants of the Dark Lord of the Sith, Freedon Nadd, and they were fully under the influence of the Dark Side.
You don't know the power of the Dark Side.
The Jedi allied with the Beast Riders and went back to Iziz to reclaim the city. A bloody battle ensued and would have been lost if Master Jeth had not intervened with his battle meditation. After the battle, Master Jeth questioned the young Jedi's abilities to handle the mission, which angered Ulic.
I can feel your anger. It gives you focus, makes you stronger.
The peace on Onderaan was short-lived, as the spirit of Freedon Nadd inhabited the body of the king and captured Master Jeth. Ulic and a fellow apprentice, Nomi Sunrider, went to his aid and confronted Nadd in the chamber of the castle. Nadd revealed several disturbing things as he told of his role in bringing Alima and Sital Kato to the Empress Teta system to take over as leaders and to start the secret Krath Society. He also foretold that Ulic would become a great Sith. Nadd perished again, and Nomi and Ulic were sent to check the rumors in the Empress Teta system. The two Jedi were unprepared for the size of the Krath following and ran headlong into a trap. The Jedi suffered casualties in the battle, but managed to retreat and meet up with Jedi reinforcements. Due to the size of the Force they faced, the Jedi were desperate for a plan of action. Ulic came to the conclusion that the only way to bring down the Krath was from within. He would infiltrate their ranks and bring them down. The Masters adamantly rejected the idea, but before its merits could be discussed, the Krath attacked and Master Jeth was killed. Blinded by his rage, Ulic decided to follow his plan. He told Kay and professed his love for Nomi and left.
Do not defy the council.
Ulic got a chance to win favor with the Krath when, during a public execution, a prisoner escaped and Ulic struck him down. Alima was appreciative of his help, but Sital distrusted him and sent him for torture and poisoning with Sith potions. His former fellow students attempted to contact him, but Ulic had Nomi imprisoned in order to get secret communication to her. Kay and Tot Donita engineered an escape, but Ulic stayed behind and in a fit of rage struck Sital down. Despite protests by the others, Ulic denounced his ties to the Jedi and stayed on the dark path. Shortly after, the rogue Jedi Exar Kun came to the system to challenge Keldroma as the only other dark side adept that could challenge him. In the duel, the Sith amulets that each wore came to life, and the spirit of the Dark Lord of the Sith, Marco Ragnos, appeared and declared them Sith Lords. Kun the Master and Ulic the Apprentice.
A Master and an Apprentice.
They set out to conquer the Republic, and the Sith Wars began.
At last we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last we will have revenge.
The leader of the Mandalorians, Mandalore, took exception to the new rule of the system and challenged Ulic. Mandalore was defeated in battle and pledged their allegiance to the already growing Force. They took the fight to the Republic and attacked Coruscant. During the battle, Ulic was captured and taken before the Senate to be tried. As he was about to be sentenced, Exar Kun entered and freed him. After the battle, the Sith caused a star detonation, which destroyed the Jedi library on Ossus. The Sith went to the library to collect the remaining artifacts, and Ulluk was confronted by his brother. In a rage-filled duel, Ulluk struck Kay down and killed him. He was consumed by despair, which Nomi ended for him by using a forbidden technique to cut Ulluk off from the Force. Broken, he left for exile. Taking on his new life, a pilot named Hagen transported him to Yavin 4, but he was still haunted by his past and moved on to Renvar. He stayed in exile there until he was tracked down by Nomi's daughter, Vima. Despite an initial protest, Ulluk agreed to teach Vima, despite still not being able to connect with the Force. Nomi came looking for the both of them and saw that he had found some peace. Unbeknownst to Nomi, the Jedi Skylar had followed her to exact her revenge on Ulluk for killing her mate. Ulluk would not fight her and convinced her to put down her weapon. However, Hagen had overheard her talk of Ulluk's crimes and shot the former Jedi and Dark Lord in the chest. As he lay in Nomi's arms, he asked her for forgiveness, which she granted, and then he thanked Vima for helping him find peace. With that, his body disappeared and he became one with the Force. There are no independent accounts of the events on Renvar, but there is a tomb for him on the ice planet, and it is possible that Jedi that venture there may feel his spirit in the temple.
Ulluk Heldroma.
The knowledge you seek is very powerful, Anakin Skywalker. Use it carefully, or it will lead you to the dark side.
I'm not afraid.
You should be.
For more on Ulluk and his adventures in the Old Republic, check out the Dark Horse comic series Tales of the Jedi, which include Knights of the Old Republic, The Freedonnad Uprising, Dark Lords of the Sith, The Sith War, and Redemption. Ulluk also makes a very important cameo appearance in the Clone Wars video game.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message, Artu, the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
It's a trick. Send no reply.
We got some great listener mail to share with you this week. We'll kick things off with a couple of Star Wars tales.
Our first email comes from Alberto Briseño from Mexico City, Mexico. He writes in, I've been a Star Wars fan since I was 7 when A New Hope opened in movie theaters. I'm so glad to have your Forcecast as a great information source. I've been listening to each one of your shows, and I find them really entertaining and enlightening. As a matter of fact, you are my driving buddies when I go from my job to my home. Can't have better company. You guys are so much fun to listen to. Although I am in Mexico, I've been a constant visitor of both TheForce.net and RebelScum as sources for everything relating to Star Wars. Great work on both pages. There's a little Star Wars moment I would like to share with you. Back in 2001, a Star Wars convention was held here in Mexico City, and Jeremy Bullock was invited to sign autographs. Being Boba Fett, one of my favorite characters, I had to get his autograph. Once we got to his booth after like 2 hours in line, he signed a photo, a Boba Fett 300th figure, and I introduced him to my girlfriend, now my wife. He was chatting with us, and we told him we were getting married the following year. He wished us all the luck and gave us his best wishes. Wow. I was very happy to be congratulated by Boba Fett, Jimmy Bullock himself. Not a lot of people get so lucky here in Mexico. Anyway, there's a little Star Wars moment I wanted to share with you guys.
Thank you, Alberto. That is really cool. We get a lot of the Jeremy Bullock moments, and we were talking off mic a little bit ago about, you know, Andy Warhol said you get 15 minutes of fame. I say everybody gets 15 minutes with Jeremy Bullock. And our next Star Wars tale comes from our good buddy Master Epp. He says, hello again. I'm here to tell you about my Star Wars tale. When I was going to the premiere of Star Wars Episode 3, I was the only one who dressed up and was actually applauded by some of the employees as I was in my leather Anakin costume, and even the movie was over, I kept it on in the packed theater. Now, our good buddy Master Epp is 12 years old and actually dressed up as Anakin for the premiere of Episode 3, so congratulations, Master Epp. You're a braver soul than I. And in our regular listener mail, this one coming from Mike in Maryland. Mike says, what's up, fellas? Love the podcast. Been a Star Wars fan my whole life, as the original Star Wars came out 2 years before I was born, though I know my father took me to see Jedi around age 4. I just thought I would chime in as another listener who really digs the EU segments, especially the character of the week. I got into the books through the Thrawn trilogy about 2 years ago and have consequently read approximately 50 of the novels since then.
Wow.
My favorite has been the New Jedi Order series, for I just love the dark tone to the storyline and the gruesome action, though I do understand that not everyone got into that particular series. After recently finishing the NJO, I backtracked to the X-Wing series and have enjoyed learning all of the backstory on characters I grew to love in the New Jedi Order. I'll be moving on to the Dark Nest trilogy and the Legacy series soon, for I want to catch up on the most recent events in the Star Wars universe. That way, I'm protecting myself from spoilers and can start guessing what will happen next with everything else. I guess at this point in time I'm rambling, but love the idea that there are so many others out there that share the same passion for great stories and characters. And darn it, now you have even interested me in collecting. Take care and best of luck to you. Sincerely, Mike. Well, Mike, we got somebody else that's bitten by the bug, the collecting bug.
Someone else hooked.
Yep, absolutely. You can't just, you know, once you start, you never go back.
Our next email comes from Jamie Estes in Maryville, Tennessee. Last week, you were talking about these scaled vehicles and the cost in making them. I have an example for you. Back in the 80s, there was a G.I. Joe aircraft carrier that was 6 feet long. Back in the day, it had a price tag of $100, which was quite a bit of money back then. I was ecstatic to get this for Christmas and played with it for a total of 2 weeks. After that, my mother made me take it apart since it had taken the place of our coffee table. And like you said on the podcast, it just isn't feasible for kids or collectors to display these large pieces, no matter how much I would love to have a 6 foot diameter Death Star. Love the show and please keep up the good work. That is a great point. I know when I started reading this, I thought, oh, I was so jealous of the guy that I knew that had the aircraft carrier, and it was really cool. But we could never play with it because it was always in pieces and parts all over his house, because he would have to take it apart and his mom would move it while she was cleaning or what have you. And so there was never enough room for a jet to actually take off of it unless you actually really used your imagination. So again, these scaled vehicles, probably not going to happen, because the days of those gigantic play sets and kids having the room to display them and play with them, probably over.
Probably. And, you know, it's interesting that we got this email from Jamie, because if you go to the roundup of week 14, the questions from the question and answer session with Hasbro, G.I. Joe comes up a couple of times. In particularly, one of the G.I. Joe playsets is actually a cannibalized Geonosis battle arena. And they kind of talk about how the, as I call it, the G.I. Joeification of the Star Wars line. And they bring some of that to play. Also, question comes up about what would Hasbro really like to see. What's that kind of that one project that they got rattling around that they'd give anything to do? And a Death Star playset is at the top of their list. There's really a big contingent in the on the Hasbro team that wants to see this happen. So I would assume if it does happen, it's going to be piecemeal, but
and not 6 foot long.
Our last listener mail comes from Kenny. He says, hey guys, my name is Kenny, and I live in central Utah. First off, I just wanted to say that I love your podcast. I listened to your show for the first time yesterday, and I must say I am hooked. I was amazed by the amount of information you guys have about Star Wars, and I was also blown away by the EU characters, and I had no idea the Star Wars story went beyond Return of the Jedi. I wanted to know more about the expanded universe, and it's given me a whole new look at the world of Star Wars, and I'm looking forward to hearing about the new EU character of the week. If possible, could you get back to me on where I can learn more about the EU characters? I'd love to know more. Keep up the good work, guys. You have one more listener. May the Force be with you. And we responded back to Kenny. Pete actually fielded that and sent him off to our good buddy Jovial Jay, who is really knows more about EU than anybody else I know.
Yeah, if you check out the Jedi journals that Jay, alliteration aside, keeps going for us, they are spectacular. They have everything that you can possibly think of that's been printed in the Star Wars universe. And, you know, we're going to have some more sections with Jay in the upcoming weeks, where he's going to talk to us about where we should start with our own collections if we were going to start a collection of books, and where we would start if we started our own library of Star Wars books, and what the best ones are to get you kicked into the expanded universe if you haven't started yet.
Yeah, and he's got lots of great information on that. And Kenny also, he says, you know, talks about how much we know about Star Wars. Well, Kenny, we appreciate that. And yeah, Pete and I do know a lot about Star Wars, but we also have an incredible team at TheForce.net and RebelScum.com that are always there to provide help when we need it, and always there to fact check us. Sometimes, you know, the day that the podcast goes live, and other times, but they're always really helpful and always really great. So we definitely want to send our love to our whole team, because we couldn't do it without Dustin, Jay, Dan, and everybody else at TFN and Rebel Scum.
That's going to just about wrap it up for this week's show. We'd like to say thanks again to Kyle Newman, and make sure you're here next week for part two of our chat in the cantina.
And don't forget about our promotion to be in the top 10 over at podcastalley.com by the end of October. We've already broken into the top 10, but we want to make sure we stay there, and we need your help. So follow the links provided on our show notes at rebelscum.com and theforce.net with all the details on how to do that for us so that we can give you 10 days of giveaways from official picks. Also, keep the Star Wars tales coming in. There's a couple different ways you can send those to us. You can give us a call at 330-871-4TFN. That's 330-871-4TFN. Or if you're on Skype, and there's no reason why you shouldn't be, it's an absolute free download. You can call us for free. Just look us up at ForceCast. And if you want to do it the old route, you can send us an email at podcast@theforce.net. If you've got a Star Wars tale, pipe it down as an MP3, send it to, again, podcast@theforce.net.
And make sure to stop by our forums at rebelscum.com to keep updated on what's going on in the show and let us know what you think. And check out our show notes at theforce.net and rebelscum.com for links to all of the stories that we covered here today.
For the ForceCast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
We've got our good friend Spaghetti Cake playing us out this week with Farm Boy. Check him out at spaghetticake.com. And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
Just a farm boy with dust in his eyes, a princess from pastures of green. Lonesome rebel, she sent out a call. He picked it up on his machine, rescued and got away clean. Handsome rogue with a lopsided grin, a scoundrel and pirate was he. His partner in crime kept her running on time. Thick was the honor of thieves. 2,000 downtown leave. Falcon flying with destiny, headlong into the fight. Birds of a better well weathered together, chasing the dark from the night. A crazy old man, trained in the art of the age, gave him the weapon to make his return. The forces of darkness would come to reunite father and son. Falcon flying with destiny, headlong into the fire. Chasing the dark from the night. Trust in your feelings and find a new hope. Take your best shot and let go. Falcon flight with destiny, headlong into the fight.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.